Weight loss solutions are not one-size-fits-all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
All right, so we're diving into some pretty crucial research on the Baltic Sea today.
Yeah, it's...
Eutrophication risk? Probably not a term you hear every day.
Definitely not something you want to see on, like, a restaurant menu.
Right. Not exactly appetizing. But seriously, this 2023 study from the Journal of Cleaner Production, it's, well, it's kind of a big deal.
It really is. They're not just saying, hey, the Baltic's in trouble, which we kind of already knew.
Right, right.
They actually tried to quantify it, put some numbers on just how worried we should be.
Which is honestly a little intimidating, but also really important.
Oh, absolutely. Because once you can measure something, you can start to manage it, right?
Exactly. Okay, so before we get into the nitty-gritty of their findings, let's set the stage a bit for our listeners. Why is the Baltic Sea particularly susceptible to this whole eutrophication thing?
So the Baltic is, well, it's kind of like that kid in school who always got sick,
mm-hmm.
you know, just naturally a bit more delicate.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
It's shallow for a sea, almost completely landlocked, and the water, it takes like 25 to 30 years for it to completely refresh.
You're kidding.
Nope. That means anything that washes in from those surrounding countries, fertilizers, runoff, you name it, it's sticking around for a long, long time.
So it's like a bathtub with a very slow drain.
That's a great way to put it. And all that stuff building up, that's where the trouble starts.
Right, eutrophication. For those of us who need a little refresher, what exactly is it and why should we care?
Okay, imagine a pond, right? But instead of being nice and clear, it's covered in this thick layer of green gunk algae. That's eutrophication in action.
Not the best look for a pond, or a sea for that matter.
Definitely not. Basically, excess nutrients, things like nitrogen and phosphorus from agriculture and wastewater, they're like fertilizer for algae.
So we're basically force feeding the Baltic Sea, a diet it can't handle.
Pretty much. And as these massive algal blooms grow and eventually die off, they decompose. And that process sucks the oxygen right out of the water.
And no oxygen means?
No life for fish, shellfish, all the cool creatures that call the Baltic home. It becomes a dead zone.
Wow, that's grim. And I'm guessing it doesn't stop there, right? This has bigger implications.
You're absolutely right. This isn't just a local problem. The study actually found that eutrophication could turn the Baltic Sea into, well, kind of a methane factory.
Methane, like the greenhouse gas.
The one and only. And it's not good news. They're projecting a potential spike of 30 to 90% in methane emissions from the Baltic in the next decade alone.
So this is about way more than just a few dead fish.
Way more. We're talking about global climate change.
Okay, so clearly this risk index they've developed, it's getting at something really important. They're not just waving their hands and saying eutrophication is bad. They're putting hard numbers on it.
Exactly. They wanted to move beyond just general observations and get really specific about the level of risk in different parts of the Baltic.
So how did they actually do that? What went into creating this index?
Well, they focus on four key nutrients: total phosphorus, total nitrogen, and then their dissolved inorganic forms. So that's dissolved inorganic phosphorus and dissolved inorganic nitrogen.
Okay, why those four specifically? What makes them the ringleaders of the eutrophication gang?
They're the ones most directly responsible for fueling those massive algal blooms we talked about earlier. And by looking at them in both their total amounts and in their dissolved inorganic forms, the researchers could tell not only how much was there, but also how readily available it was to cause trouble.
So it's like you can have a pantry full of junk food, but if it's all locked up, it's not as immediately tempting as, say, a bowl of candy sitting right out on the counter.
Exactly. They wanted to understand both the overall load and the bioavailability of these nutrients.
Makes sense. So they identified these key culprits, but they didn't stop there, right? They were also looking at changes over time.
Spot on. They weren't just interested in a snapshot in time. They analyzed data from 2013 to 2016 to track how these nutrient levels were changing or not changing.
Which is crucial for figuring out if any management efforts, past or present, are actually making a dent.
Exactly. Trends are everything in this game. Well, drum roll, please. The not-so-lucky winners are the Bornholm Basin and the Gulf of Finland. Those two areas popped up with the highest risk scores on their index.
Right, okay, yeah, I vaguely remember those names from the geography books. But remind me, why those spots in particular? Is it just like bad real estate in the Baltic Sea, or is there something else going on?
It's a bit more complicated than just bad luck on the old Baltic Sea housing market.
Okay, good, because I was starting to feel bad for those poor basins.
Remember how we talked about the Baltic being like a giant bathtub? Well, these basins, they're more like shallow dishes sitting inside that tub.
Even smaller, even more confined.
Exactly. Think of it like this: the smaller the space, the harder it is to air things out,
mm-hmm.
right? So any pollutants that find their way into these basins, they have a much harder time escaping.
Oh, so they really are like the Baltic's junk drawers. All that stuff just accumulates and never really goes away.
Oh, you got it. And the Bornholm Basin, in particular, it's basically at the receiving end of a lot of agricultural runoff and wastewater discharge from several different countries. All those nutrients, they get funneled into this relatively small area and just, well, fester.
Yikes, not a pretty picture. So it sounds like this study is confirming some things we already suspected, but with a lot more detail and hard data. But it's not like this is the first time anyone's looked at eutrophication in the Baltic, right? How do these findings line up with what other organizations are saying?
That's a great question. And the researchers actually did compare their risk index to some of the assessments done by Helcom.
Helcom.
Yeah, the Helsinki Commission. They're kind of the environmental watchdogs for the Baltic Sea, making sure everyone's playing by the rules, trying to protect the ecosystem.
Right, right, of course. So this study is sort of like an independent audit of Helcom's work, in a way.
Exactly. They wanted to see if their fancy new risk index was coming up with similar results. And for the most part, they do seem to agree on which areas are the most at risk.
Okay, that's reassuring, at least.
It is, but there is a but. The study also suggests that Helcom might be, perhaps, slightly underestimating the problem in certain areas.
Uh-oh. That's not what you want to hear when it comes to something as important as the health of an entire sea.
Definitely not. But hey, that's why we do this research, right? To get a clearer picture of what's really going on.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've got this very detailed risk index. We know which areas are in the most trouble. But what can actually be done about it? Is the Baltic Sea just doomed to become a giant algae smoothie?
Well, I wouldn't say doomed just yet. The study does paint a somewhat bleak picture, but it also offers some glimmers of hope.
Okay, I'll bite. What kind of hope are we talking about here?
They highlight three main control measures that could, if implemented effectively, really turn things around. And the first one, perhaps the most fundamental, is all about better tracking, better monitoring.
So more frequent testing of the water, basically, making sure we're keeping a close eye on those nutrient levels.
Yes, but it's more nuanced than that. It's not just about measuring more often, but also measuring smarter.
Mm-hmm.
We need more targeted, more localized monitoring in each of these sub-basins.
So instead of just taking the Baltic Sea's temperature all at once, we need to check for hot spots in each specific area.
Precisely. Think of it like if you were feeling sick, you wouldn't just take your temperature once and call it a day, right? Mm-hmm. You might check different areas, see if maybe one side is warmer than the other to get a better sense of what's going on.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so more frequent, more localized monitoring. Got it. What's the second control measure?
This one focuses on actually addressing the root causes of this whole nutrient overload. Because, let's face it, trying to clean up a mess after it's already been made is way harder than preventing it in the first place, right?
Oh, absolutely. Easier to close the barn door before the horse gets out, as they say. But what does that look like in practice? Are we talking about shutting down all industry and agriculture in the entire Baltic Sea region?
Well, that would certainly solve the problem, but it's not exactly realistic, is it?
Probably not going to win any popularity contests with that approach.
No, not at all. Luckily, there are less extreme solutions that could still make a huge difference. For example, upgrading wastewater treatment plants.
Ah, so less nutrient-rich sewage ending up in the Baltic.
You got it. Those treatment plants, they're doing a lot of the heavy lifting already, but there's always room for improvement. Even small upgrades can make a big difference in terms of removing more nutrients before the water is released back into the environment.
Makes sense. What about agriculture? I imagine that's a much tougher nut to crack.
It definitely presents its own unique challenges. But there are some really promising practices out there, like precision fertilization, where farmers use only the exact amount of fertilizer needed, minimizing runoff, or planting these buffer strips along waterways to catch any excess nutrients before they reach the sea.
So it's all about working with nature, not against it.
Exactly. And these solutions, they're not just good for the environment. They often make economic sense for farmers in the long run as well. It's a win-win.
I like win-wins. Okay, so we've got better monitoring and tackling those sources of pollution. What's the third control measure? What's the magic bullet here?
Well, if only it were as simple as a magic bullet. But the third measure, and it's perhaps the most complex one to actually implement, is regional cooperation.
Ah, yes. Getting all 9 countries bordering the Baltic Sea to agree on something that's never easy.
You can say that again. It's like trying to herd cats sometimes. But the thing is, the Baltic Sea, it doesn't care about political boundaries. What happens in one country directly affects all the others.
It's a shared responsibility, whether they like it or not.
Exactly. And this study specifically calls out the EU Water Framework Directive as a potential model for how this kind of international cooperation can actually work.
So this EU directive, it's kind of like setting some ground rules for how they're all going to share this this precious resource.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, we all agree the Baltic Sea is important, so let's actually act like it, right? Yeah.
Right. But, you know, even if everyone gets on board with these solutions, monitoring more effectively, cleaning up their act, working together, we're not going to see results overnight, right? This isn't like, instant oatmeal or something?
Oh, no, definitely not. And that's one of the most, I think, important takeaways from this study. Even if we completely stopped all pollution into the Baltic today, like literally shut everything down, which, let's be real, is never going to happen.
Yeah, that'll not happen.
It would still take decades for the ecosystem to recover, like to actually undo the damage that's been done.
Wow, decades, huh? It really highlights the long-term impact of what we're doing or not doing.
Absolutely. It all comes back to that. Remember that 25 to 30-year water replacement time. The Baltic, it's like trying to fill up a bathtub with the drain, only open a crack.
You keep using that bathtub analogy, and I gotta say, it's really sticking with me. So we're essentially trying to outrun a very slow drain, even as we're turning down the tap.
That's a great way to put it. And it's a little daunting, sure. But it also means that what we do today, the choices we make, they have a real tangible impact on the future of the Baltic Sea, like for generations to come.
It really puts things into perspective, doesn't it? It's not just about us. It's about our kids, our grandkids. We have a responsibility to leave things better than we found them.
I wholeheartedly agree. And that brings me to a question, actually, for our listeners, if you don't mind me putting you on the spot a bit.
Oh, I love a good challenge.
Lay it on us.
Knowing what we know now, the urgency, the long road to recovery, the fact that this is a shared responsibility, that no one country can solve this alone, what are you willing to do to be part of the solution? What actions, big or small, can you take in your own life to ensure a healthier future for the Baltic Sea? That's such a great question. And it's not about having all the answers, right? It's about being willing to learn, to change our habits, to speak up for what we believe in, whether that's supporting sustainable seafood choices, reducing our own water consumption to ease the burden on those wastewater treatment plants, contacting our elected officials to let them know we care about this issue. Every little bit helps.
Every single drop in that bathtub, right? It might seem insignificant on its own, but together, all those drops, they add up.
They really do. The future of the Baltic Sea, it might seem a bit uncertain right now, maybe even a little scary, but it's not hopeless. We have the power to change course, to make things right.
Absolutely. And it starts with understanding the risks, making informed choices, and most importantly, working together. Because the Baltic Sea, it's not just a body of water, it's a shared home that deserves our protection.
Beautifully said. To a cleaner Baltic, both now and in the future. Thanks for diving deep with us today, everyone. Until next time, stay curious.